Are you guys ready to record this whole thing all over again?
I didn't care for it. I didn't buy it.
That seems pretty ridiculous.
I don't even want to think about the possibility of you having your dick out.
Yikes.
Is this the most important thing in the universe? What happened to it? I don't know.
I needed to suck in absolutely every moment of awesomeness.
Yeah.
Hey, welcome back to another great episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. David here with Randy and Justin, the two bestest friends a guy could ever have. How you guys doing today?
Wow, I don't know where to go after that introduction. I'm fantastic. Yeah, how are you doing?
You're like Justin? John Raffio from
Parks and Rec.
And Rec. Just singing all your sentences. I did not know.
Yeah, him and Bill Hader were BB-8.
That's fantastic. I am fabulous. Thank you.
I like it. You saw a movie this weekend, didn't you?
Ooh,
Were there beasts in this movie?
No, not the one I saw.
Oh. what was in this movie that you saw? Tell us about it. You saw The Arrival, right, Randy?
I did, yeah. Yeah. There were some beasts, I guess.
You guys are going to have counterpoints. You guys are going to have counterpoint here. I want to hear what you have to say, Randy, and then we'll let Justin speak. Randy, go.
All right. Well, first I'm going to classify this as a big old spoiler discussion here. So if you have not seen Arrival and you don't want it spoiled for you, I would recommend probably skipping ahead like 5 minutes or maybe just two or three. I don't know how long we're going to talk about it for. But anyway, that having been said, I was joking around before we actually started rolling, and I said, this is everything I wanted Independence Day 2 to be, just to kind of fuck with David, because he hasn't seen it yet, leading him to believe that the aliens are big, bad, and looking for trouble. But in this movie, they're actually not. They're actually quite friendly, and they're just looking to help the human race by giving them this great gift, the gift of their language, which really kind of, for the lack of a better description, kind of changes the way humans perceive time once you understand their language. And Amy Adams' character is a linguist who is very much like the only person on Earth who could possibly tackle this alien language over this short period of time, where it's very tense because you never know, like all these different human militaries are kind of banding together like, we're going to fucking blow them up. And it's like, no, we got to talk to them. They may not be bad, and shit happens. And anyway, I'm going to kind of skip to the controversial bit here, because all throughout the movie, we kind of see Amy Adams' character, like, she's what we think is flashing back to this time with her daughter, who is terminally ill and is going to die, and we see all this stuff, and we think they're flashbacks. Ultimately, they end up being flash forwards, because she's able to kind of see into the future, and the big question is, does she kind of have this ability innate within her, and that's why she was kind of chosen more or less by these aliens as the one who would be able to read their language and interpret time differently? Does she have this innate ability already to be able to kind of look forward in time, or is it only through the understanding of the alien language that she gains the ability to look forward in time? Justin, what do you think?
I thought it was the latter. By understanding the language, she gained the ability.
See, I thought it to be the latter as well, but my wife thought that she only was chosen by the aliens because she already kind of had that gift. She already had a good foundation built, and that it was just a matter of building on top of that.
The only argument I would have against that would be that technically the United States military chose her to be the one to go and check things out, and she wasn't even the first one to even do it. Remember, the other guy went crazy.
Right.
She just had a different approach and was able to connect with them. But I don't know.
So her future kid's going to die?
Yes. Yeah.
So the whole thing is, okay, so it kind of comes down to this like moral existential question at the end of the movie is, do you still go forward with this aspect of your life? Like having a kid, knowing that the child is going to die like at age 12 or however old the kid ends up being. Are you going to put yourself through that? Yeah, you have these good times to look forward to, but you also know there is a finite end point. Do you still do it? Just for the joy of having those good moments, do you still do it?
Yeah, that's a question.
Which is interesting. It asks the hard questions.
Yeah.
One that
we're starting the podcast on a down note here.
Yeah, and honestly, I don't even know how you could even answer that question. Like, I feel like it's an impossible question to answer.
Right.
At least truthfully, 100% truthfully.
Right.
I think that there are, one could argue that it was selfish, and others could argue that the life is always a gift, and it's not forever, that we all know that life isn't permanent. So, sure, some people live longer than others, but, I mean, it's what you do with the time that you have, right? So,
yeah, exactly.
I think
if you knew going into it you were going to have 12 years, you know, you just cram that 12 years with love and everything, you know. It's, you know,
I mean, it's
you
just like
kind of prepare yourself, I guess.
Exactly. And like, I hate to break it down like this, but someone that's always had an animal in my life, you know, I know perfectly well that, and like dogs and cats don't live as long as humans, right? That's just it's a fact of life. And I know perfectly well that when I fell in love with Kiona when she was 4, she was a rescue, and I knew that 4 years of her life were already something that I wasn't going to be a part of. But and her range for her breed tends to be 12 years. So I was like, well, shit, man, I have to make the most out of these. What could be. Could be 8 years, could be 12 years, could be 6 years. Who knows? I have to make the most of it, and I love that doggy every single day of my life. Knowing
that is a really...
Well. Okay, go ahead.
I was just going to say that's a perfect, beautiful way to break it down. Well done. And that's something that everybody can relate to. I was going to take it on the far side, the other side of the spectrum, and say, look, if you know you only have one night with a porn star, are you going to deny that just because you know it's never going to happen again?
No joke. I was just singing One Night in Bangkok before you hopped on. I don't know. What are you going to do it? Are you going to do that one night?
I'm going to do that one night just because you may never have that opportunity again.
There you go.
Just like, you know, you may never have that opportunity to create that one special child, even if it is just for a finite period of time. You're never going to have that same exact dog again. You're never going to have those memories. You know, sure, there might be other animals, might be other pets that you are deeply in love with, that you share very special bonds with, but it's never going to be the same as that one.
Right.
Because they're all different.
Mm. Well, what did you think of the movie, Justin?
I actually didn't like it.
Break it down like a fraction.
I don't know, man. It was kind of slow, and I didn't really care for the payoff at the end. I don't know if I'm just a cynical man now or what, but I didn't like the soundtrack at all. To me, it literally sounded like to what I interpreted as a recording of mentally disabled whales singing, and I hated it. Like, it was, imagine me, you know how I sing and how terrible it is, me pretending to be a whale singing.
That's like a Finding Nemo situation?
Yeah. Like, oh, hello. Totally, same thing. To me, that's what, and I couldn't get over it. And I was all kinds of antsy and pantsy in my theater seat. Like, I wasn't enjoying it. It's not really an enjoyable movie. It's a clever story, but it's not an enjoyable movie. And that might be my problem. That's probably on me, because now I like to be entertained.
Yeah, if you want to go to a movie and just have a good time and sit and smile and just be happy, this isn't the movie for you. Because it's kind of a downer all the way through, and it makes you think. There are certain points where, you know, when you're tying things together, you know, God forbid you don't already know the twist, so I apologize if we've spoiled this for anybody, but when you're going into it, your brain's kind of going, and it kind of makes you think.
Fuck those people.
I know, but, you know, people get butthurt, and I just don't want to be the recipient of that butthurtness.
Butthurtness! You need a shot!
But
I don't know. I mean, it's just a different kind of movie. I wasn't really feeling it.
Yeah,
and I like the director, that Denis Villeneuve or whatever his name is. Villeneuve.
Sicario.
I didn't like Prisoners either, though. Holy shit! So, did you guys see Prisoners by chance?
Yeah,
with Wolverine and and Donnie Darko.
With Jack Gyllenhaal.
Holy shit, the ending just made me feel like I wasted 2 hours of my time.
Yeah.
I hated I hated the ending. I thought the ending was fucking stupid and a waste of time. But I loved Sicario.
Sicario's pretty good. And Sicario's an amazing looking film. And same DP, and he's the guy who's gonna shoot the Han Solo standalone film. So that's why I was curious how the film looked, and Justin, you were saying that there was only a couple locales, so it's not really anything to show off.
Yeah, it's a lake house and then sort of this this outdoors like drive that they take from the military base to the spaceship. Where does it take
place? The spaceship itself is
it's like in Montana or something.
Like Montana. Yeah, Montana.
So imagine Montana, sort of like a gloomy day in Montana, and then
a lot of low fog, and they're kind of like in a gully in between some mountains. Or
yeah, it's like Blood Gulch, and then and then fucking it's like inside a tent, couple tents, and then like sort of like a military headquarters with a lot of computers, I guess. So it's like a conference room, and then also a college campus. Those are really the only locales.
And inside the
ship. Yeah.
Inside
yeah, and which is very super plain. It's a black room with sort of a plexiglass wall with white blinding white light on the other side and fog, and so the light that you that's basically what is projecting light on the characters, we're to believe is the light coming from that room that's separated by this sort of force field.
All right, well, what grade would you give it, Justin?
Ugh, I feel like I'm just the asshole, so I don't know. I don't feel comfortable putting a grade on it because I didn't enjoy it. So, and after having this, it's great that it gave us this opportunity to have this discussion. I think it brings a lot of interesting points and questions to our minds, which is fantastic, and it has us talking, so that's fantastic. But it's just not my kind of movie. It reminded me of Contact, and how I just fucking sat stewing in my chair that I was just so mad that I wasted that much time in my life.
Yeah. It's funny that you mentioned that, because I was thinking it had kind of a Contact vibe to it as well. But on the other side of things, I will say that I kind of went into this with the right mindset that it was going to be kind of a slow trudge to the finish with this movie. It wasn't going to be real quick, real fast-paced, action-oriented or anything like that. And I was kind of in the right mood for it. I was in the mood for something that was a little bit more somber, something that I wanted to think about a little bit. So I enjoyed this a fair amount, and I'd actually give it an A-.
Oh. And see, and that's probably fair. I think any normal person would probably like this movie. I was just not feeling it.
You're not the only person I've talked to that disliked it, so don't feel bad.
It sounds like the kind of movie that's kind of it's going to be a big hit or a big miss. You know? Yeah,
and I like that. You know, I'm a fan of that. It's either you love it or you hate it.
Right.
It gets people talking. Fuck that middle ground. That's for that. That's code for forgetful. So
forgetful is bullshit.
Yeah.
Bullshit.
What about like speaking June. Of bullshit? Oh yeah, I was going to say, what about Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them?
Well, I saw it. I just didn't really care for it a lot.
Aww,
it was all right. It was fine. I think that J.K. Rowling did a great job of building the world, and I am extremely excited for the sequels for Fantastic Beasts. I just feel that this was an awkward jumping off point that didn't really pay off. I likened it a lot to people complaining about episode 1 and episode 2. Like, why didn't we start Anakin at the episode 2 age? Why did we have to see him as a little kid? To where clearly the overarching story for these 5 films is going to be Dumbledore combating his former lover of Grindelwald. And it's setting that up, and it's kind of set up at the end of this film. And I don't know why I had to watch this movie to get to this narrative. And it was a lot of, you know, I'm not a big period piece guy. You know, it takes place in the late 20s. So I'm already kind of like iffy on it. It doesn't have any, you know, recognizable Harry Potter faces. The music is kind of similar, but it's still trying to trend. It's trying to be its own character. We spent a lot of time with these Fantastic Beasts that I don't really care about. You know, we go into Mr. Scamander's briefcase or his bag, and we see where he keeps all of these fantastical creatures. And a lot of them don't even look that good. They look like episode 1 era CGI, but I don't know. The story just didn't do it for me. You know, I'm not a Newt Scamander. It's not someone I think who can carry a 5-film franchise. I think they're going to need to shift that over to Dumbledore. And yeah, and, you know, Johnny Depp shows up, and you know, and that's a wrap.
He does show up.
He does show up. Yeah.
And who does he play?
Grindelwald.
What, do you want me to spoil it for you?
He's not Dumbledore, is he?
You want me to spoil it for you?
Oh my God, he's not, is he? Yeah, I want to spoil it. Yeah, spoil it. Spoiler alert, everybody.
All right, spoiler. It's not. It's like they couldn't have cared less about the reveal. He is not Dumbledore. He plays Grindelwald.
Okay.
There's a scene where all of a sudden someone who you think is somebody, Scamander points his wand at him, says "Revealo," and then he's Grindelwald, and you're like, that guy looks like Johnny Depp with spiky white hair. And then they cart him away, and he says like one thing in this weird accent, and credits. It's very abrupt. Very abrupt. And once you see it, we'll chat more about they create this new creature that's like people who repress magic, because in this world, witches and wizards are kind of like a subclass citizen. They're like, they're really trying to hide so that they don't get hunted and killed like the Salem witch trials. And so because of that, some witches repress their magic and it manifests in this like obelisk looking like obliterator or whatever. And I think that's going to come into play when we get into the backstory of Dumbledore and Grindelwald and their relationship and how Dumbledore's sister dies. So yeah. So, I mean, I know a lot of people love it. I just, you know, I'm a huge Harry Potter fan. So it's not that I just don't like the world. It's just, I kind of like Harry, Ron, and Hermione, I think, maybe too much. And, the new characters didn't really do it for me. The one like non-magical character, I won't spoil his ending, but it's very unsatisfying how they conclude his story. Cause like the whole thing is like, you know, nomadges, you know, the American version of muggles. If they see a magic person, they have to have their mind wiped, and like it's just unsatisfying how they conclude his story.
Oh, so do they, after he goes on this crazy adventure with Newt Scamander, he has to forget all about it, like Men in Black style?
They take the neuralizer to him.
Exactly.
Lame.
And so the whole time you're like, oh, he's helping all these people, the wizards have to see what value he has, they can't wipe his mind, and then in the end they wipe his mind.
And that's the guy with the mustache?
Yeah. Who does a great job. Like he's kind of our portal into these fantastic creatures, and he's very likable. But all in all, I'd say probably C+. I would say that I like all of the original Harry Potter films more than this film.
Even the one with the Triwizarding Tournament?
Even Goblet of Fire. Yeah. I will say I might like this one more than Deathly Hallows Part 1.
Oh, shit. Mm.
Maybe, because that's 2 hours of Ron and Harry and Hermione just whining and trudging through the jungle.
I know. I hate how Ron is just so anti the whole deal. It's like, dude, yeah. Get over it, man. This is the business you've chosen.
Right. And he's always mad at Harry. It's like, it's not Harry's fault that people want to kill him. That's, if you're going to be the best friend of some guy who everyone wants to kill, you know, it's just going to happen.
Is there any kind of post-credit scene?
There is no post-credit scene, no. Okay. And Dumbledore is mentioned in passing, and yeah, it's like I said, very disappointing. I mean, there was a little more because, you know, we know the backstory of Scamander that, you know, Dumbledore talks about him in the books a little bit that, you know, he got expelled from school. Like, so Scamander's kind of like Dumbledore's like second failure. So his first failure is Grindelwald. You know, he falls in love with him, Grindelwald becomes bad, Dumbledore can't turn him to light, he has to end up taking him out. You know, Scamander is like the new promising student who he takes under his wing, and shit goes awry, and then it's not until Harry comes that he finally has his quote-unquote success. So they're kind of setting, if I'm reading the tea leaves right, they're setting this up, this, you know, 13 movie story arc as, you know, the timeline of Dumbledore's failures kind of thing.
Look, man, you're pretty good, but you suck at being a wizard.
You're really good at it by yourself? Maybe just don't talk to other people. It's like an office space. Hey, you want to come hang out? No, I want you fucking on my life, too.
Peter, man!
They say you got a case of the mice. I do believe that. Kick your ass. Speaking of kicking ass, Justin, you love Dune, right?
Ooh, that is a negative. Not a fan. I'm from the desert. I hate the sand.
Oh, that's true.
It's everywhere.
Of course. I can episode two.
What do they call Harkonnen? Harkonnen and Atreides?
Atreides. And then there's a third one that doesn't matter. But
the Capulets?
Yeah, and the Montagues.
The Montagues.
Legendary Pictures, you know, the geek...
Godzilla!
They got Godzilla, got King Kong, they got Warcraft, they got Pacific Rim. They're really going out of the way to really, you know, show us geeks some love. And so they bought both TV and film rights to Dune. And no word on what they're going to do with it, but I'm assuming they're going to make a TV show and a movie out of it.
They're
going to
burn it. Probably not. They probably needed to acquire the TV rights in order to make the film. They probably needed to do both.
I'm sure they were selling it as a package.
Yeah, because the first time, the David Lynch version was obviously a movie, and then in the early 2000s, I want to say, there was the TV version that had Susan Sarandon in it. And
Sci-fi original movie.
It covered several of the books, if I recall. I never ended up seeing it, but I heard it was pretty well done.
John Hurt was in it.
Horatio Hornblower was in it.
It was, yes. But the Herbert estate of his, I don't know if it's his son or his grandson, Brian Herbert, he's going to be an executive producer on the film. And so they're going to be, I guess, protecting the legacy of Dune. So I know, I don't think Randy likes it either. I know Justin and I are not fans of the original Dune with Patrick Stewart and Kyle MacLachlan. But
Sting, don't forget Sting.
And Sting. Shit.
Oh, yeah.
What are your thoughts, Randy? I know Justin and I are vocal fuck this movie, but
man. Okay, so you haven't lived until you've seen the 6-hour TV cut of Lynch's Dune. No, and I'm not even joking. Of course, 6 hours is including all the commercials and everything. But I remember it was such a big deal back in the 90s before you could watch shit on the internet, like getting a bootleg copy at your local comic book convention of like the 4.5-hour version of Dune where they cut out all the commercials and they only ever aired it on TV. I remember watching it once or twice and thinking, wow, this is kind of cool. This is different than any other sci-fi I ever watched. Then I tried watching it in my adulthood and I'm like, I can't get through this.
I just can't.
It's hard.
I just can't.
It's a tough sell, man. I'm sure the book is good, but I just can't do the movie.
I tried the book. I couldn't get through the book either.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's not even 300 pages, I don't think.
Yeah, Hobbit's not even barely 300 pages. I couldn't get that shit.
That's true.
Either.
God, Hobbit's a tough read, man. Holy shit, what a boring 100 book.
Pages of cloaks and swords and all that nonsense.
And singing.
Singing.
A lot of singing.
Did you guys, when it was on Netflix, watch the Jodorowsky's Dune? The documentary about Alejandro Jodorowsky, who tried to make the film in the mid-70s?
No,
that sounds
It's fast. It's this documentary, and it chronicles all his old footage of when he tried to make it in the mid-70s, and he was trying to do some fucking just batshit crazy things with it. And it may still be on Netflix. If it is, definitely check it out. It's Jodorowsky, Jodorowsky.
Why? Because we like you.
Because we love you. And it's great. It's in the vein of like The Man from La Mancha, you know, the Terry Gilliam documentary about him trying to make Don Quixote.
Which is amazing.
Yeah. And so it's like that. It's just you see this filmmaker just descend into madness as one wrong decision turns into two wrong decisions, and before you know, he's just buried. And there's no way out of it. And like the studios have sunk millions of dollars into this thing, and he's put all of his money into it. And everyone knows it's not going to work, and it's being held together by just like a wing and a prayer, and then the prayer goes away, and it's just kind of sad at the end.
So just for reference, it is no longer on Netflix. I just pulled it up right now.
If it comes back, you should check it out. Civil War's coming to Netflix in December for those Captain America fans.
Oh, yeah. So now's the time where you have to really decide whether you want to go out and purchase those the Disney Blu-rays, because we're finally almost at 2017 when all this Disney shit's just going to flood Netflix. And
and the rumor is Disney's going to buy Netflix.
I know. So you don't have to worry about it anymore. Unless they treat it like their vault and you have 3 months or something to buy it, to watch the movie, and then it goes away forever.
I was trying to explain the vault to someone that someone was like 21 the other day. And they're like, I was like, hey, remember, I remember when Disney movies, like, they'd be on sale for like 3 months and they go away and it was like this mad risk. Oh, I got to get Cinderella. It's going away. And she's like, what? And I'm all, yeah, this is before Amazon and all that shit. And she's
they vaulted it for 7 years at a time.
Yeah, so they're like, they wouldn't sell it? And I'm like, no. They created this, like, crazy hype. Like, I'm like, and it worked because, like, my family would never think that they had to own Cinderella. But, oh, my God, I can only get it for, like, 4 months? Shit, I got to go get Cinderella. And it was nuts. She just couldn't fathom a time before the internet, and I felt really old.
It's without fathom.
You know what else is not fathomable? Amelia Clark doing a decent role, and now she's gonna be in the Han Solo movie, and I'm worried, Randy, walking off this ledge. Or sorry, Dustin.
Well, you didn't like her as Sarah Connor in the Terminator movie.
I didn't have the love for Genesis that you guys had. I didn't hate it.
But I didn't think it was that bad.
I didn't think it was that bad either.
I didn't think it was bad. I just thought it was just fine.
Huh.
I'm cautiously optimistic when it comes to the Han Solo movie, because here's the thing. And this is no fault of anybody who is in the cast or who has taken part in the casting of this movie. I think we're kind of going for like a fun, playful, lighthearted Han Solo adventure. I don't think it's going to be real deep. And I'm not just saying that because Donald Glover is typically a comedic actor, because I know he's got some pretty serious chops when it comes to dramatic stuff as well. But once he was cast as Lando, I'm like, okay, well, I could see this going a little bit more of a silly route. And again, this isn't slamming anybody as an actor or anything. I think it's going to be fun, and I think she could be fun. And as long as she has the right role, as long as the kind of plays to her strengths. So I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe that makes sense.
She'll be his girlfriend that helps him, that somehow takes part in Rogue One as well.
Yeah. I just
stealing the plans of the Death Star.
Everything about this movie's just been so just on point and exciting, and like you were saying, they're definitely gearing towards a certain feel. You know, they got a guy who looks like a young Harrison Ford. You got Donald Glover, who's a great supporting character. You know, he couldn't carry a film, but he's a great supporting character. They got Lord and Miller, who are just great directors with just impeccable comedic timing. And, you know, they've just got all of these bam, 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 bam. And then they cast Amelia Clark, which I'm not saying anything bad against her personally, but she's got kind of like one mode, and like it's like a somber mode, and maybe she'll change it. Maybe I'm just too in Daenerys, you know, because all we really have to compare her to is Daenerys, her turn as Sarah Connor, which was very Daenerys-esque. Maybe she'll surprise us. I hope so. I have a ton of faith in Lord and Miller. They haven't let me down yet. But I'm just, this is like the first, and they got, what's his name to shoot, the DP to shoot it, whose name I've already forgotten, who did Sicario and did Arrival and stuff like that. But I don't know. Am I looking too much into that, Justin?
Maybe. She obviously had to go through the auditions, and they saw something that they liked. And since you have so much faith in them as directors, maybe you should just take a step back and hope for the best.
And let them do their job.
Yeah. Right. Quit being that asshole trying to interfere with the directors, Dave.
It's interesting that some of the people that they did see for the role, one of them is Tessa Thompson, and she was the love interest of Creed in the movie Creed.
Oh, yeah, I like her.
So it's kind of an interesting interesting spectrum that they did. They also did Jessica Henwick. I don't know who she is, but she's from Game of Thrones, they say. I'm gonna check with a Google machine right now to see who that is. Yeah, I still don't know who that is. I got her picture and everything. Oh, she was one of the Sand Snakes.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be awkward at the next Game of Thrones meeting. Like, oh, yeah, I was going to be in this huge movie, and this bitch Daenerys took my part.
What? It's going to be awkward. She's in Iron Fist.
Oh.
The Netflix show?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cool. She was in Force Awakens as well.
Was she now?
Yeah, I don't know who she was, but she was in it.
Jess Testor. That's who she was.
Oh, Jess Testor.
Yeah. I'm surprised she doesn't have an action figure. There was a time when if you were just
give him time.
Mentioned, you got a figure.
Eventually she'll get one.
No. The thing is, now that they're making movies every year, it's going to be different than any other period in Star Wars collecting history, because we're not going to have all that time to sit and stew and wait for new product in between movies. So it's constantly going to be churning out new material after new material after new material. So I think a lot of smaller characters are going to go by the wayside, where before they would have definitely been made into action figures. But that's my two cents.
Speaking of piling on top of, there's been a lot of Rogue One teasers and TV spots, international TV spots, behind the scenes featurettes. Entertainment Weekly just did like a 15 photo spread. They're blasting a lot of Rogue One at us right now. And I remember when Force Awakens came out, we were all excited that they were kind of keeping a lot of the stuff to the minimum. And we were like, oh, we're going into it kind of blind. And I understand that with Rogue One, they kind of have to make sure we understand that it's not episode 8, so they have to kind of give us a little bit. But are we reaching the point where it's too much we're seeing, Justin?
I don't think so. Only because I feel like in order to see the other stuff, we have to watch international trailers. I don't have cable, so I'm not seeing anything that they throw on TV. I'm just seeing what pops up on geeklegacy.com. And so I am okay with that. I do think if there was a shot where Darth Vader fucking whipped out his lightsaber, that might be too much. That's a moment that needs to be saved for the theater.
Yeah.
Just saying. But me personally, I'm okay with what has been shown, because I feel like I'm still having to go out of my way to see the stuff. Does that make sense? Okay.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it makes total sense. I understand that we live a different life than like someone who's just like a normal fan who would stumble across a trailer every so often. You know, we are kind of entrenched in it, so we see all the character descriptions and stuff like that. So I guess maybe that makes a little more sense. What do you think, Randy?
Well, and I think this is something that we experienced during The Force Awakens as well, but I'm especially noticing it for Rogue One. We're seeing a lot of the same clips in the different trailers, like a lot. So if there's a new TV spot, you might get one new shot, or you might get like one new line of dialogue, that kind of thing. I think cumulatively, if you were to add it all up, it doesn't really amount to that much of the movie. I feel like I keep seeing bits of the same scene. There's only so many times we can see the beach scene with the AT-ACTs attacking. And there's only so many times that we can see the streets of Jeddah with the fucking hover tank and the AT-STs and the stormtroopers blowing up in an explosion, that kind of thing. We're seeing a lot of the same stuff, different angles, little snippets of the same scene. So I think they're really holding back on what I'm going to call the meat and potatoes of the story. They're just showing us cool stuff that reminds us of Star Wars. AT-ATs and fucking stormtroopers.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
But my Dave?
Well, my only thing that I would counter Randy's with is that to where The Force Awakens, we saw mostly the same footage just over and over and over again, but it was all like over music, or maybe Kylo Ren saying like one line of dialogue, to where all of the trailers and TV spots have unique dialogue typically. They all end in the whole saying like, rebellions are built on hope, which I'll get to in a second. But they all, like, we know a great deal of the plot that we didn't know when we went into Force Awakens. And I'm at a point to where I'm fine with it now. I just, knowing the Disney marketing machine, I'm just hoping that this is their ramp up, and we're going to kind of reach a kind of like a plateau until the film comes out. I just critical mass. Right. I don't want them to continue to build. And so I know that Doctor Strange has been out, so their biggest theatrical push is done with, but Moana comes out this weekend. And so I could see them trying to make a like one final push. I'm just afraid if they push just one more time, then I may kind of start feeling a little overwhelmed. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, it totally does. And we are still 3 weeks out, so that gives them a lot of time to, because they're going to do the 5 more days, 4 more days, and we're going to get a little new snippet here, there, that kind of thing, just like they
did. That's fine, because we'll have seen it by then, Randy. At that point, okay.
I hope so. I'm keeping my fingers crossed for that press screening, because otherwise the suspense, once other people have seen it and I know stuff could potentially leak online, that drives me nuts. But if we're among the first, I like that.
It's going to open in the UK 2 days before America.
Yeah, and they've already had their tickets go on sale.
Yeah.
The UK and the Netherlands, I think, are the two countries that have already gone on sale. And still no word on exactly when ours are going on sale, although the show times have been posted. So if you were to go to your favorite movie ticket buying website or what have you, you can actually see when the showings are, but you can't buy tickets yet.
And what day does the movie actually come out?
The 18th. Or 16th.
I think it's 16th.
Whichever one's the Friday.
Yeah. Friday the 16th.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. That makes sense, because Christmas is on a Sunday. Yeah, that's fine. I'm having concerns, and I've had it from the beginning, of the dialogue. Like, does it seem bad to you two? Or am I just going off sound bites, and I shouldn't do that?
I think you're on the right track. I think you're recognizing that it's bad, but you're also recognizing that it is just sound bites meant to just thrown at us. And when we hear it over and over, you get sick of that rebellions are built on hope line, which just feels forced.
Or we're rebels. I rebelled. Yeah.
It didn't bother me the first time I heard it. It's just the repetition of it that's kind of bothering me. And because we have been exposed to so little dialogue from the movie on the whole, I think we're just focusing too much on that.
Yeah, so could just be. Let go. Well, my concern is that no one else's dialogue, other than Jin's dialogue, is bugging me, and I don't want to not like Jin because she's our protagonist, and it's important that she's a fully fleshed out and important character. And, to where Forest Whitaker's and all the other people whose dialogue we've heard, even, what's his name? Orsic, his thunderous voice doesn't bug me like you think it would. It's all Jin. And I don't know. Are you feeling that, Justin, or am I just an idiot? You can say I'm an idiot. It's fine.
I don't know, man. I got nothing to say. I got no more to add. Maybe I'm just tuning it out. I don't know. I've taken the spoiler-free approach, in a sense, to where I just don't even notice shit anymore. I just turn a blind eye.
That's probably the way to go. I think I just want it to be so good, and I'm worried, so.
Yeah.
So like when the first trailer was released, And when it ended, I was like, "Holy shit! This feels like Star Wars. Like it totally took me back to a New Hope kind of a feeling." And I love that. And I've been experiencing sort of as they're showing new stuff. I'm like, "Oh, that's kind of cool," but I still don't really know what it's about. Short of them just trying to acquire the plans, that's all we really know. But now with this new trailer, they showed that. Oh, Jin's father is somebody special, and that's why they picked her, because she has an in with the guy with the plan, so it makes sense, but that's really all I know. I'm playing the ignorant idiot when it comes to this movie.
The way to do it.
I couldn't say one more thing about this movie.
Except Darth Vader's in it. Any movie with Darth Vader in it is okay with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm a little bit upset that his costume, because a lot of people were saying, oh, it's going to be the A New Hope version, which, I mean, if you're really geeky and you're a giant Star Wars nerd, like I tend to be, and David, like you probably are as well, that Darth Vader's costume changes a little bit from movie to movie to movie. And in A New Hope, which is, real close to when this movie takes place, he has this kind of like little skirt thing that he wears underneath his over part of his armor, but underneath his cape, and it covers part of his chest armor. But in all the promotional stills that I've seen, or stills from the movie, it's actually his chest armor is on the outside of it, which is how he wore it in Empire and Jedi, And so that's cool. There's a precedent for that, but it doesn't really match A New Hope. So it's got some people up in arms. And I know it's a stupid little nitpicky thing. I understand. I get it. But still, to me, that's like a little, I don't know. Like maybe they could have done a little bit more homework.
Right. And well, especially because they made such a big deal to get it right in Revenge of the Sith. Like, I remember they purposely made, like, the helmet not perfect because it wasn't perfect in A New Hope. So, you know, it was asymmetrical in A New Hope, so it was asymmetrical in Revenge of the Sith. So,
you guys somewhere are fucking nerds.
In the grand scheme of things, none of this matters. But, you know,
as long as he lops off Jin's head, I don't care. I don't care what he's wearing. He could be wearing a tutu and a clown hat. If he cuts off her head, I'm in.
If he goes through this entire movie, if he goes through this entire movie without igniting his lightsaber, I'm going to be so bummed.
No, yeah, he's got to fucking murder somebody. I don't. If he can murder Jin's father, I don't care. He's got to murder somebody.
Yeah.
And
someone's got to fuck up. Someone's got to pay.
He should have his lightsaber pointed forward and then force pull some asshole into it. That would be amazing. Like, as like an interrogation technique. But then the guy's just not talking. He's like, really? You're going to make me do this in front of everyone? And then just do it.
He's going to whisper, why you got to make me like an asshole here?
Have you guys heard rumors that Kylo Ren's going to wear Darth Vader's cape in the next movie?
I have heard rumors that he is going to have access to it, or he's going to be trying to get it, because and it's not going to be the cape that he died in, obviously, because that would have been burned in the funeral pyre with Vader. But, you know, just like any kind of military officer throughout time, you know, they wear different uniforms for different campaigns, different battles, you know. it's like a sports team, you know, you got the away jersey and you got the home jersey. But I hear that there's a bunch of like really wealthy people throughout the galaxy who collect Imperial memorabilia, kind of like people who collect Nazi memorabilia and shit like that. And he actually goes and tracks down one of Darth Vader's capes. Whether he wears it, like I said, I don't know. But I hear that is a thing in Episode 8.
It's a thing, eh?
Now, Vader's pretty tall, so do you think he'll have it altered to make it a little bit shorter? Or is it going to drag on the floor like some bridesmaid? Or like a bride dress.
He's going to get those giant ass, like 5-inch lifts put on his boots. He's going to be walking around like a total 1970s pimp in that thing.
Oh, shit.
Just so that he's tall enough.
He's not an asshole.
he's not gonna wreck Vader's cloak just so that he can wear it. He's gonna get himself some stupid shoes instead.
My going out shoes.
Yeah. He's going to go disco dancing. He's going to have like a little fishbowl in one of them.
Do the chains tie to some sort of bolt, like a Frankenstein bolt on his costume? Or how does Vader's cape and cloak actually work?
I think that the chain just holds one side of the cape to the other to keep it on. Oh. And gravity does the rest to hold it wherever it is.
Even you when know, he's fighting?
Falls on his body. Well, I mean, that's how it's supposed to work. And I'm sure if you ever saw any of the behind-the-scenes stuff, there'd be a lot of kind of bloopers and outtakes during the fighting with his cape just like flying over on top of the lightsaber or blinding him or whatever.
I'm picturing like a hockey jersey scenario where someone just grabs his cape and pulls it over his eyes and then he starts beating the shit out of him.
I mean, and that's just the risk that you run when you wear a cape to a freaking
no capes.
No capes.
What else you got, Dave?
Did you see, since we brought up Episode 8 briefly, did you see the character descriptions for Episode 8 that came out, Randy or Justin?
No.
They shot a couple, because, you know, Benicio Del Toro's, you know, going to be in it. And, you know, there's been a lot of speculation. You know, he's supposed to be a villainous character. You know, what he was going to be, was he going to be, like, you know, Snoke's real right-hand man? Was he going to be, you know, someone on par with Snoke? Or was he just going to be one of the Knights of Ren? And it looks like he might be some ambiguous man in black, you know, like an evil Lando almost. So that's kind of interesting. So Del Toro's a pretty good actor. The Laura Dern's character is going to be a like super highfalutin, like royal figure.
Laura Dern.
Yeah.
Really?
She's supposed to be the most regal character ever introduced in a Star Wars, and she's not terribly fond of Miss Organa.
Huh.
A woman inherits the earth.
Yeah, no kidding. Yes. Dinosaur lady.
So that was kind of interesting. That was really it. But, you know, it's always fun to get more more Star Wars goodiness. So maybe we'll get some Del Toro, Kylo Ren on Rey and Luke action.
That'd be pretty badass. I'd pay to see that. In fact, we all will.
Yes, we will. Several times, probably.
Probably, yeah.
Well, let's go to a couple quickie air nays real quick. So we all were... Well, no, I wasn't. Some of us were excited about a Stargate reboot.
Starboot.
Oh, man. I'm in love with that title now.
A Stargate reboot. It is now no longer going to be a thing. Devlin and Emmerich say they're no longer going to be making it. And I was going to ask you guys, is this because Independence Day Resurgence did so poorly? Justin?
That's probably the case. Plus, I don't think everyone was on board with this idea anyway. I think the poor performance or mediocre performance of Independence Day was just the final nail in the coffin. I don't think that the world needs more Stargate.
How about you, Randy? What do you think?
I'm going to agree with what Justin said, and I'm going to build on to it with between the movie and all the Stargate TV series all taking place in the same universe. That would be akin to taking all the original cast Star Trek movies and the original series and all that stuff and completely blowing it away, saying it doesn't exist, and then try to reboot
like they did?
No.
What do you mean? No. That's exactly what they did.
No, because it's not rebooted. It's all together. Granted, there's a Delta and an Alpha fucking timeline, whatever you want to call it, but it's all tied together. I mean, here you're taking so much stuff that has existed for so long and has such a decent sized fan base. It doesn't make sense to reboot it without having that built in audience already there, without having demand for it. So it makes sense. And yeah, I think definitely the low numbers for Independence Day helped point to that conclusion.
All right. Second one, American Tail turned 30 years old today or this week. That's a pretty big milestone. Randy, were you a big fan of American Tail as a kid since it came out in our heyday of our childhood?
You know, I've never seen it.
That's did you not funny. Watch movies when you were a kid?
No, he was playing with figures in the backyard and searching for treasure and shit, like Indiana Jones.
This is where Randy tells us that he saw Five Goes West.
Oh, no, okay, funny story.
Oh, shit.
No, you know what it is? I didn't trust any animation that wasn't Disney back in the day, because you know what I watched? I watched The Secret of Nim.
Oh, love
and that
it.
Movie fucking terrified me as a child. It was dark.
So good.
It's dark. And I'm like, you know what? If it's not Disney, if it doesn't have that playful D on the cover, I don't want it in me.
Whoa, wait. All right, we're gonna go on to Justin on that one. Justin, American Tail.
Yeah, I remember it. And in fact, I used to always cry. Yeah, I remember American Tail. every time Fievel would sing, not every time, but every time I watched the movie and they did the Somewhere Out There bit. Where he's separated from his family, and he knows that they're there somewhere, looking at the same moon and stars. I would cry. I love my family so much, and the idea of being separated from them like that just terrified me.
Terrible.
Mm-hmm. I never saw Five Goes West, but an American Tail for sure. And it cracks me up that you say that it's 30 years old, because when I watched it as a kid, I always thought it was really old, just because of that animation style. For whatever reason, I just thought that movie was like 20 years older than I was.
Like Don Bluth equals old shit.
Yeah, he just had his own little way of doing things,
making it look old.
Yeah, I mean, Secret of Nim, same way.
Absolutely.
It's done with that, with the actual drawings, and I don't know. It's weird, like that cel shaded shit. I don't know. It's crazy. Looks good though.
I bet Secret Nim would still scare me today.
Oh man, those rats. Those rats, man. And Dragon? What kind of crazy name is that for a cat? And yeah, the Great Owl? Forget about it. With his head all twisted upside down and shit. Like you gotta
Let's go from the scary to the sad. It was last week Robert Redford announced that he was gonna be retiring from acting. Oh. And he was definitely one of the icons of the industry, and even in recent performances like Civil War or Pete's Dragon, or not Civil War, Winter Soldier, Pete's Dragon, he brought gravitas to these roles, and like they seemed more important because Robert Redford was them, and you know, he was Butch Cassidy as Kid, Sneakers, all these awesome roles. And Justin, what does Robert Redford, you know, mean to you as an actor, and how much will you miss him? This much?
Yeah, I'll miss him. He's been in movies ever since I've been alive, so it's going to be weird going forward not to see him anymore. You mentioned some movies that I actually really enjoy. Sneakers. Forget about it. That's one of my favorite movies. That was one of my first exposures to hacking, too. Like, it was when I kind of first learned about what it meant to be digital. And this whole idea of data just floating out there and bits of code and things like that, that was all from that movie, and that was kind of cool. It was a learning experience. But totally, it kind of actually gives me a sense of just how old I really am, to be honest with you. Only because Robert Redford was someone that my dad always really enjoyed. And so if Robert Redford's retiring, then that means my dad's got to be pretty old, which means I'm pretty old. And now I'm just kind of sad. So thanks.
No problem. Yeah, he says he's going to continue he's a big advocate for film. You know, he obviously started this the Sundance Film Festival. Mm-hmm. He also does have four films currently in production or post-production. He said he'll obviously finish those obligations. But yeah, he was in The Natural, Out of Africa, you know, The Sting. Yeah. You know, he was in a lot of stuff. What about you, Randy? What do you think of us losing good old Robert Redford?
Well, I like to see that he's leaving on his own terms. You know, I think we've seen it happen with a lot of older actors. The older they get, it's like Hollywood doesn't know what roles to give them anymore and gives them less meaningful, less poignant characters. They kind of end up becoming caricatures of themselves. And I'm going to use Sean Connery as an example. I mean, look at League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Any number of movies from like the last 5 years of his career. They're just, you know, he went from being in some really cool, really high profile stuff to just being in trash. And I like, I'm sorry. Had he retired a few years earlier, he would have done so with a little bit more dignity. I feel like Robert Redford retiring right now, he's going with dignity.
Indecent Am I an asshole proposal? For saying that? No, not at all. Indecent Proposal, even at 60 years old, he was able to steal Demi Moore away from Woody Harrelson.
I forgot about that. Indecent Proposal? Yeah. That was so long ago. 1993, dude.
Yeah. Spy Game, Last Castle. I like Last Castle. James Gandolfini.
What was the one Legal where he Eagles? Was like a reporter and
Up Close
Celine
and Personal?
Dion was not in it, but her song was.
Yeah, Michelle Pfeiffer was the girl with her.
That's right. Personal. I saw it at the drive-in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All the President's Men. I mean, yeah, he had a great career. The Natural is still one of my favorite movies of all time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, The Natural, the Roy Hobbs. Yeah,
Roy Hobbs. Said to be a 40-year-old freshman, had a damn mind. Or 40-year-old rookie had a damn mind. But
baseball movies are always pretty good. I like the baseball movies
because they're almost always like ensemble films because baseball is such a big team. Mm-hmm. Like it's always like it's never like one person. It's always there's always like eight or nine people you like. So it's like Wilford Brimley and Michael Madsen.
What's the one where the guy's pitching a perfect game and it's all sort
the love
of
game?
Yeah, I like that one.
Oh yeah, with Kevin Costner.
Yeah,
John C. Reilly. Mm-hmm. J.K. Simmons.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Except. Yeah. Okay. Never mind.
Except what?
Nothing.
For Kelly Preston,
I like Kelly Preston. She's hot. I had big crush on her when I was a kid.
And how?
Yeah. Huh. I always forget that fucking movie she was in, like in the
Mischief.
Mischief. That's it. Oh,
yeah. I'm reading your mind.
I know.
I love that movie.
That's so great. And you know what's so sad is I literally forgot all about her because I hadn't really paid attention to her since like Twins, you know, and then. Then she shows up in fucking Jerry Maguire, and she's got a little hot little scene. And I was like, ooh la la, right? And then I forget about her again. And then For the Love of Game comes out. I'm like, yes! Smoking hot. Forget all about her, but then what does she show up in? Fucking Sky High, and I love that movie. So
oh. Love that movie.
With we Kurt saw that Russell. In the drive-in. Yeah.
With Kurt Russell.
Gotta love it.
And not Emma Stone.
Yes, that is correct. No Emma Stone. But fucking Sky High is such a great movie.
And it's on Netflix right now, too.
Is it really?
I watched it the other day.
Oh, fantastic.
Oh, I love that movie so much.
It's so good, right?
It's pretty good. Regrettably, I made booms.
Oh, man. Poor sidekicks.
You guys want to play a fun game?
Sure. What do you got?
Oh, hell yeah.
In honor of Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them and the return of the Harry Potter universe, I got to thinking, all of these teachers in the Harry Potter world have stupid weird names, and I wanted to see how well you guys knew the first names of the teachers and staff at Hogwarts University.
What?
Guys, yes. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you the first name, and you have to match it with the teacher that corresponds with.
Okay.
Sound easy?
No.
You'll get to laugh at us plenty, I'm sure.
I'm sure. So what we'll do is, it was nice taking turns because it wasn't a speed game. So we'll do the same thing here. I did a random draw, and Randy gets to go first. So Randy.
Ooh, all right. I'm ready.
Starting here. First name. We're gonna start off a little simple. First name, Rubius.
You know that.
I don't.
Oh.
And I've read all the books.
Steal this one? You're going to feel really dumb when Justin steals this from you.
Rubius Hagrid, Keeper of Keys.
Yeah.
Randy.
I never would have guessed that. Never.
Really? That was giving me a softball there.
How many times did they even mention that in the books? Like maybe in the first book and that's it?
Oh.
No,
it's just always Hagrid after that.
I just remember in the first movie when he says his name to Harry.
Yeah. All right, Justin on the board. Justin, your turn.
Sorry.
Minerva.
Is that McGonagall?
It is McGonagall. Good job. All right, Randy. Albus.
Oh, Dumbledore.
All right. Justin, Gilderoy.
Lockhart. My favorite.
All right, Randy. Remus.
Lupin.
That's right. Justin, Alistair.
Moody.
Randy, Severus.
Snape.
Justin, Dolores.
Umbridge.
All right. Randy, Godric. Some of these may be...
Oh, Gryffindor?
Yeah.
Yes, there you go. Good job.
Gryffindor!
All right. Justin, let's see. Horace.
Slughorn.
Oh, good job. I thought I was going to get you there.
That's my favorite book out of all of them, so impossible.
Apple of Prince is pretty good.
Yeah.
All right. Randy, Salazar.
Slytherin?
That is Slytherin. Good job, Randy.
Slytherin.
All right. They like their alliteration.
Yeah.
That's right. All right. Justin, Argus.
Is that Felch?
It is. Good job. Nice. Deep hole there, Justin. All right, Randy. All right, let's see. Who else do I have left? All right, Poppy.
Oh. Cock. I don't know.
I have no idea who that is.
She's the one that teaches herbology, right?
No,
it is actually. Yeah.
Poppy?
I couldn't tell you her name, but I know who you're talking about.
Pomfrey.
Oh.
All right. Two more left. We got, all right, so it's Justin's turn. We're going to go with Rowena.
No idea.
Randy. And you steal it. Ravenclaw. All right. Randy, you are one behind with one left to go. Randy, do you know the last name of Helga?
Hufflepuff?
Hufflepuff it is. We got a tie game here.
I'll have you know I got all four of the house names, so those were kind of almost gimmies.
No. Well,
yes, I appreciate it.
No problem. So yeah. Good game, guys. You guys are both champions in my eyes. I couldn't possibly love either of you more than the other. And, yeah, it's been fun. It's been real.
Who did you say was the herbology teacher?
Well, Madame Pomfrey, but she's actually the school nurse, I think.
I think you're right. She is the school nurse.
I think Sprout is the...
Yes.
Is the,
yeah, Sprout's the teacher. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking Poppy, which is the name of a flower, so...
That's cute.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's where you get the heroin from.
That's right.
The poppies.
I think... No.
Get the milk of the poppy.
Isn't it opium is poppy?
Yeah. Sorry, I just took us to a really weird place.
You did.
Yeah.
All right. Justin's got to get up early. Anybody got anything else to add?
I've got something to plug real quick.
Plug it.
So, as you may have heard in a previous episode, Nonstop to Comic-Con is going to be playing at the Paradise City Comic-Con in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, of all places. That's pretty badass. That's going to be December 9th through 11th. We actually have two screenings, which is super badass. We're going to be screening on Friday at 4:30, and then we're also going to be screening on Saturday the 10th at 3:45. So we have two screenings. If you miss us on Friday, come see us on Saturday if you're hanging out doing the geeky stuff, or see both.
I'm going to be in Fort Lauderdale in June. Maybe they can like hold the screening back 7 months.
Maybe they could do a third screening just for you.
Yeah. Beginning of June. All right. What about you, Justin? You got anything?
No. And no.
like
and no.
Computer says no.
Computer says no.
Thanks again for hanging out with me, boys. I hope everyone enjoyed this show. If you liked it, make sure to go to iTunes and give us one of them 5-star ratings, or just say like, "Oh, these guys are the best." And while you're there, also listen to the other podcast in the Geek Legacy Network. We got the Pixelated Podcast with Justin and Steven talking about those electronic games that you play with the controllers and having fun with the video games. And then you got Tyler and Jeff doing the Comic Corner Podcast, talking about funny books that are drawn with spandex and girls with short waists and big boobs. And make sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at Geek Legacy, and go to geeklegacy.com for all your geek news and reviews and everything else that's awesome. Goodbye.